Hi from Cape Town, South Africa, everyone. We have a special episode of Digital Communion for you this week. Thomas and I were invited on to a show called The Hidden Why, which is run by a very cool dude out in Japan, an Australian called Lee Martinuzzi. It was a really fun and interesting conversation, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are.
I can tell you from experience, the effect you have on others is the most valuable currency there is.
Don't think. Feel. It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Got everyone? Yep.
Cool. Here I am.
You guys are on opposite sides of the globe, are you?
Yeah, no, I believe Nixon
is in Los Angeles.
Right. Yeah.
So you're in
Nixon, Thailand.
You're in Australia, right?
I'm in Japan.
Oh, cool.
From Australia in Japan. That's yep.
Cool. From Australia in Japan. Yeah.
Cool to coming to Japan not too distant future, actually.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
Now we've got some pretty bad audio going on here, guys. Cause I don't know if you.
How did you find out about?
Bad audio going on here, guys. I don't know if you.
Mine's actually okay now. It was. Thomas, you good?
Thomas.
Let's try hanging up and calling again, but.
Not the way best on three ways, is it? Could be my internet.
Oh, connection. I can hear you guys now.
You there?
Here we are. Yeah, I can hear you guys perfectly now. Okay.
It's I don't have much success doing three-way calls, I'll be honest, in Japan anyway.
Well, if you need to defer to the true foundation of Digital Communion, I am happy to let Nick take this interview.
Okay, well, let's see how we go. I'd love to.
All
it's
right,
good to
sure.
have you both online. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and answer to your question, I actually came across your podcast. A mate recommended to me. He's in Australia, and he said, "Hey, listen to these guys. They're pretty authentic, and you know they talk about just life and figuring shit out." And sounds like it was up my alley. So he said it'd be a good listen. And listening to your show, yeah, I enjoyed it. So I thought it'd be a good chance to have a chat with you and inspire the audience a bit further here as well, because I know you guys are pretty passionate and purposeful in your life objectives.
Yeah, man, go ahead, Nick. I was just going to say that I saw. Well, you talk.
No, after you, bud.
So, Lee, I was looking over your page, and you know, it's really, it's so fucking positive, and I'm so just by that. Where does all that positivity come from? Because I feel like you're a kindred spirit, man. You're a brother in that.
Positive. I think it's because I'm probably actually I reflect on this, and we'll start the show now. By the way, I'll give you an introduction soon, just because we've got some good audio going. But yeah, my positivity. Sometimes I wonder where that does come from, and I wonder if it's a case that because I'm actually quite negative, maybe that brings out a lot of positivity, and I sort of pursue that path in some sort of you know instinctual passion. But I don't know. Maybe it's just that I am positive and other people have said that. So that's good to hear it coming from you as well.
Yeah, man. Cool. I just think it's so cool. We need more people like you on the planet.
What are you guys, you feel the same like with your show and your objective? What's the message?
I'll let you take that, Nick. Man, I don't think Thomas and I have actually ever sat down and defined a message or I don't think we've really defined anything for Digital Communion except that it's beyond definition. We're just interested in life and we're interested in improving our lives, obviously, as everyone else is. But I want to use everything at my disposal to do that. And I enjoy sharing my journey in that quest with listeners and friends and an audience. And I know Thomas feels pretty much the same. What did you say, Thomas?
Yeah, absolutely. And Nick's quite a positive guy too. And you know, digital and the tagline has come to be, we're all alone in this together. So it is something about sharing those experiences, whether they're positive or negative, just trying to understand the game of life and the, you know, the legendary human experience as it's known across the universe, or we like to think.
Very authentic too in your approach, which, you know, I certainly appreciate, and I'm sure your listeners do. I think that's, it makes your show, you know, very unique and different. It's not another sort of overhyped, you know, positive show. It's the real, it's the real deal sort of thing.
That's because we've got nothing to sell yet.
So it's coming. So it's true. Coming. No. No, it's very consistent messages anyway, and I love it. I love the show. I'll give you guys a quick introduction now, since I sort of haven't done that. But here we are. We've got the two guys from Digital Communion. They've got a hit podcast out there called Digital Communion. Has been out for how long now, guys? 6 months or so? More?
I think it's about a year old.
About a year. There you go.
Yeah.
So I've become a fan over the last probably few months anyway, and certainly love the show, love the authenticity of it and the message you bring. And you've got some real humor there too. I just heard an episode where I think it was you, Thomas, you were talking about your image of God.
Yeah, man.
Is that yours? Yeah. I mean, I was actually sitting there with my wife right next to me, and we had to have a good laugh.
So we
almost didn't release that, Thomas.
That's exactly true. About it. Yeah, Lee. First of all, thanks for saying all those nice things. But yeah, I mean, I was really embarrassed about that, and I didn't even want to. You know, my question to Nick about what his God looked like was something I had on my mind for a really long time, but I didn't want to ask it because in Digital Communion we turned the question back around, and I knew that I would have to answer, and it was all based on, you know, that weird boner Zeus that I talked about. Yeah. So thanks for sitting through that, and I'm sorry if you or your wife were offended in any way.
No, I think it's, you know, there's a couple of things I could reflect on in that point, but I mean, I relaunch heaps of shows, and sometimes I just go, what a dick, what did I say that for? But it's the truth, and when you say those things, that's just how it is, and I mean, that's you know, I want to be as authentic as I can. I think you guys are obviously that as well, so commend you for launching that. As crazy as it might have been. Well, but then I listened to it, and the shock factor of it actually makes you reflect a little bit deeper. And I actually drove away. I dropped my wife home, and I started thinking about it and going, my fucking image of God, what does it look like? I mean, it's certainly not no bonus surfy dude. but then I started reflecting on that a bit deeply. So I like that shock factor, and I think it makes people want to listen to you more as well. It makes you real. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Thank you, man.
That's cool. I mean, let's do the very first inter-podcast Digital Communion question turnaround, Thomas. And let's ask Lee, what does your God look like, Lee?
Very good question. I did think about that. And on the spot, this is going to be hard to answer. I didn't picture my God with having, and I'm probably just reflecting on Thomas's your God. And I don't want to mirror that God at all, but I never really thought about it. And then when I started thinking about it, I thought, well, my God would be sort of some sort of, it'd be some sort of woman, I think, with boobs and vagina and, I don't know, very peaceful, hippie, sort of sitting on top of a mountain somewhere. That's nice. How I could picture my God, just sitting there and just looking over everything and just in peace. So I haven't really gone much further than that, but hopefully that gives you an answer to your question.
Yeah, well, so, I'm going with yours.
Yeah, what? Yeah, I know that beats Boner Zeus every time. But so, where? What informs that? What informs that God for you, or goddess rather, Lee? Were you raised in a particular religious denomination or dogmatic set of beliefs? Like, how? Where does that come from?
I like this flipping the question. Good question. I think, you know, when you look at a God, I don't really have any religious background. I mean, I was raised a Christian, but never really connected with it. And perhaps it because it was forced on me, and I've never been one of those people that like being forced to do things. So I never really had a good connection with religion there. I probably am a bit more Buddhist inclined these days, being in Japan. I don't know, I read a lot of books, and that sort of inspires me, the religion there. But sure. I suppose if you look at the image of God, if you really think about it, one's image of a God is really who they desire to become, you know, and how they would love to live their ideal life. And I think that's me. Like, I'd love to just be sitting there and, you know, in my wisdom sort of state, writing and overlooking, you know, the world from the top of a mountain in peace. Wow. And that's how I see God.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's how you guys would relate it to. I mean, you're, I don't know if you've always walk around with a big boner, Thomas, but,
Well, I got to tell you, I have one right now.
Yeah, there you go.
Listening to you guys talk about your gods. But that's really powerful, man. I mean, that's a great answer actually to that question.
That's a great answer. It brings to mind.
There you go, Nick.
Well, I've been reading or listening to some very interesting works by an author and a speaker from the mid 20th century called Neville Goddard, and he had an entirely different interpretation of Christianity and the Bible. And what he was saying is basically that the whole story of the Bible is not about an external God, but an internal God, and that there was never an actual physical Jesus Christ, and there is no God outside you. Everything is contained, or your imagination is the actual God, and it's creating everything. And when you said how people project God as what they'd like to become, it instantly brought to mind that maybe people are actually projecting God as what they are inside already.
Mm.
Interesting.
I think that's, wow. Yeah, that's pretty true. I think that's free spirits, but yeah, like if you look at people that are heavily involved in religion, and you know, I've got nothing against religion, but I think I was listening to a philosopher the other day talking about it, and I think sometimes when you attach yourself to religion, it's almost like you're giving up your own pursuits in favor of that other image, rather than truly progressing after your own thing. So, I mean, I don't know if that makes sense to you guys, but certainly in the moment it does to me, so...
absolutely, 100%. Man. Yeah.
If you're, yeah, I mean, for those people that are listening out there, and a lot of my people that listen to this show would be that sort of free spirit, you know, they're after following their own dreams and creating their own life. And, you know, whether they have a connection to religion or not, I don't know, but I assume it's not as strong as perhaps some other shows and listeners.
Let me ask you this. Do you guys think that it's possible to achieve the highest expression of individualism if you are in any way inclined to be deeply beholden to any particular religion? I mean, doesn't that keep you from being as purely individual as you can, because you can't get away from the components of that religious belief?
Wow, that's a great question. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. Lee, please give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I think anything that you pursue, and if you know, obviously depending on the level you pursue it, but if you are that in depth into a particular religion or way of lifestyle, that's going to influence your ways of thinking. And anything that influences your thinking will change your reality ultimately.
Sure.
The more in depth you are there, the more that's going to be the case. So yeah, if you're, you know, I mean, if you read books by Eckhart Tolle only, you're going to be heavily influenced by him, aren't you? So I think that'd be the same for any religion or any following that you might pursue.
What do you think, Nick? I mean, I asked you a similar question about psychedelics and whether or not you could achieve your full potential without them. I mean, do you think that the same holds true for any particular religious affiliation?
I don't have an exact answer for that question, but I have something that you might find interesting that is related. It's a thought I've had recently, which is I sometimes wonder if, I mean, guys like us, I'd say it's pretty fair to say that we are not accepting prepackaged, pre-made answers or dogmas or belief systems. And we've gone off the track and we're trying to figure it out for ourselves. And I wonder if maybe if we hadn't gone down that path, or we hadn't had our minds expanded to that degree, and we just, say, believed in, I don't know, if we were Orthodox Jews or Christians or Muslims or whatever, Buddhists or Taoists or whatever classification. I wonder if that would maybe free up our other mental or free up some mental energy and give us the ability to focus on whatever sort of creative self-expression or project or endeavor we'd want to. Because for me, I know I spend a huge amount of mental horsepower just trying to figure it out and trying to like classify stuff. And I sometimes wonder, like, maybe if I just stuck with Christianity, which was what I was raised with, if I'd maybe have taken a lot of the things in my life further. I know, for example, I mean, I come from a martial arts background, and I know like a lot of the top fighters are incredibly religious and devout, especially Christians. You get a lot of guys like that when they step in a boxing ring and they cross themselves, or before they get on a wrestling mat, they like look up to the sky and say a little prayer or whatever it is. And right. I wonder if that kind of gives them that or allows them that single-minded devotion and focus to whatever it is they want to achieve. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, guys?
Yeah, interesting. I'll let you go, Thomas.
Well, I think it is really fascinating because what you're describing, in essence, removes the inertia of skepticism, which is probably the thing that you and I, Nick, I can't speak for Lee, but Nick and I probably struggle with the most is like, you don't know what to believe in a world where there's so much misinformation and everything is a ruse, you know, at least ostensibly. So I think it would be, it's not fair to say the whole ignorance is bliss, but I think that you might be right if you just buy into a certain thought construct so holy that you don't have to spend that extra brain power fighting the skepticism. You probably make a lot of inroads to things that right now are just super struggles because we don't just accept plainly really anything. But what do you think, Lee?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, anything that you can save energy on, you'll be able to exert that energy in another way. And if that means, you know, you could save some energy to really master some projects or skills or something like that, then that makes sense. But I wonder too that if you do follow a certain way, if you go out like we're doing and trying to figure things out, I think you build up this resilience to life and this toughness that allows you to go above and beyond what may have been done on the other senses as well. So if you followed a certain path or religion or whatever it might be, you may just be stuck to a certain benchmark that could be achieved there. Whereas you go out there and do your own thing and figure things out, you may be able to go, you know, a lot further. And I certainly think there's a lot more freedom in pursuing your own ways as well.
And it definitely allows for a broader range of peak experiences, you know, by choosing to not be completely owned by any, you know, thought system.
How do you go about choosing then what to believe? I mean, do you guys just experiment? Is that how you figure things out? I mean, what's the techniques?
Great question. Nick, you go first. That's a great fucking question. I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Is this Lee, is this a curse-free podcast?
Yeah, no fucking swearing.
I shouldn't. Okay.
No, all good.
Sorry, go. Okay. Go ahead.
Cursing just sounds so much better in the Australian accent, doesn't it, Thomas?
Yeah, it's way cooler. I'm just not going to do it because you dominate me without cursing. So you keep that up, Lee.
Didn't feel natural then. How do you go about you guys creating your belief system? Like, you know, in this world, and this is the thing, myself, you guys, the people that are listening to this show, there's just so much information out there. We're globally connected. We've got all this stuff at our fingertips, and sometimes it becomes a bit overwhelming to say, well, which do I follow, you know? Like, do I meditate? Do I don't know, chant? I mean, there's just so many things. How do you guys go about, you know, deciding which to sort of follow, what beliefs to take on, and how to incorporate them into your life, I guess?
Wow. I'm kind of at a stage where I find belief to be a very dangerous word. And I try not to believe anything. Like, and I know this stage will pass, and eventually I'll pass through it now, and I'll adopt some stuff that I believe holds true. But at this point, I watch my mind very closely, and I watch what it attaches itself to, and what its biases and its tendencies and its attempt to formulate or cling to beliefs. And I try to disassociate myself from that. Whether or not that's a good thing, I'm not sure. It can be incredibly scary sometimes. Just the fact that the human mind, like, I think that the human mind is actually designed to have some limitations imposed upon it, and a set of beliefs and a set of structures and parameters within to work. Sorry, guys, I'm losing my words, but you get what I'm saying. I think we need some kind of framework to operate. And I don't know why, and I know it's been very dangerous at times. I've tried to remove that framework in an attempt to rebuild it better. And that process of removal is what I'm currently in. It's like, I don't really have anything to hold on to right now. There's a couple of things that Thomas and I have spoken about. One of them is that I really do believe in the love that I feel for the people closest to me. It's one of my anchor points. But besides that, I don't know how to choose what to believe, because right now I don't really believe in anything.
How do you not attach yourself to certain beliefs then? Because that's a freaking hard challenge, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's difficult. I mean, as I said, my anchor is that I really believe in this deal for some of my fiance, but is she secretly an alien lizard that's trying to suck the energy out of me? No, like, I don't know. Right? I always kind of hedge my little belief bets. You know, there's always a little, like, don't hold on to anything too tight, right? Like, just keep in mind that everything could change tomorrow, or your perspective, because I'm sure you guys have seen it before, but my perspective on things has changed not only 180, not only 360, but like 720 many times.
Sure.
Sometimes in a single day. So, like, anchoring myself to any kind of dogma, I don't know. I'm not at that place at this point.
I think that's good for, you know, having that openness, and it allows you to, I guess, create greater awareness too for life. And in figuring shit out, that's pretty important, yeah?
Thomas, I'll let you take this one, bud.
Well, Nick, I was just going to ask you, man, isn't that also a little bit, is there a duality there where it's also a little bit terrifying? I mean, it's that you must have some solace in the fact that you're not attaching your, you know, brain to any particular glib belief or, you know, quote unquote scientific fact. But at the same time, if you don't know what to believe in, isn't there a great sense of, just how do you keep anxiety out of your perception of reality?
That's a great question. Jesus, Thomas, you're a smart guy. I find it hard to keep up sometimes. I don't want this to sound arrogant, because I really am not saying it from a place of arrogance, but
too late.
I kind of feel that I kind of feel like I've passed through that, man. And like, I went through that, like floating in the sea of my consciousness, like not knowing what the fuck is happening, like not having any structure to hold on to.
Right.
And again, I'm probably exaggerating just how little attachments I have to beliefs. I mean, we all have beliefs and bias. I mean, I definitely have some. There's no doubt about it. Like, I believe that when I go to sleep tonight, I'll wake up tomorrow. Like, it's just a, you know, I believe that brushing my teeth is fucking keeping my teeth and gums in good health, right?
Right.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. But I guess it's not even – one of the things I do is I just don't take anything for granted, and I question everything. Like, why – the example I always use is why do I pick up my – toothbrush with my right hand and brush my teeth with my right hand? Why do I, when I'm about to walk up a flight of steps, why do I always step my left foot first or my right foot first? And is that a physiological bias because I have an imbalance in my hip or whatever it is? Like, I'm questioning everything. Like, I don't just take my actions and beliefs for granted. It is fucking scary to answer you, Thomas.
Yeah, I think that's really cool about it, that you question, you know, down to those finest details as well. I think that's awesome.
Sure, it can just seem so obsessive compulsive in a way, though, right? I mean, where does that rabbit hole end?
I don't know. I hope one day that guys like us just get to the point where we've passed through it and you don't question anything and you just are in the flow and it's just like, cool, I trust life, I trust the universe, I trust the great Padmasana sitting naked goddess on the mountaintop.
And very cool.
I just go with it, you know, like I hope we can all get to that state. And that is really one of the things I'm striving for.
Speaking of flow states, I noticed from the material on your site that, you know, you have a lot of powerful literature, you know, that you've reviewed and that you've talked about. And I was just wondering, you know, as we're talking about flow states, is there anything in particular that you do, either physical or nutritionally or spiritually, to get into those flow states?
Good question. I do. I'll answer that. I just want to ask Nick, for a second, just in regards to your questioning of everything, Nick. I mean, questioning how you step up, you know, the stairs, which hand you brush your teeth with. Do you feel that you're quite in the moment most of the times? Like, because they're sort of, to me, they would be practices that really keep you present rather than, you know, anxious about the future or whatever. Is that something you could relate to or?
Oh yeah, without question. I mean, without question, you cannot be. I use it most of the time when I'm on my motorbike, because I spend a lot of time in Thailand. I have a motorbike here, and if you are not 100% aware and in the moment, you're gonna die. It's just you are gonna die. So I really make it an effort to be in the moment as much as possible, and that carries over. Into all aspects of my life. Yeah, I'm trying to spend as much time in the present moment as possible, but I also don't have the bias that I've noticed some of the like, I don't know, new age community or spiritual community has to, they're biased against thinking about the future or reflecting on the past. And I don't think that's a good thing either. I think you need to be able to learn from the past by reflecting on it and plan for the future by thinking of it too. But yeah, I do find that it does definitely foster a sense of presence.
Does ground you a bit. No, cool. Just thought I'd ask that question. With flow state, for me, guys, what I typically need to do to really be in that flow state is I'm a morning person, so I wake up quite early and I just go through. Right now, I've actually been doing it for the last 6-7 weeks, which is a 4:30 routine. I get up and then I do half an hour of yoga, half an hour walk, followed by about 15 minutes of meditation. And then I start into my day. And that's something that I've pretty much been doing, just not as consistently as I have been in the last couple of months. But typically I'll find that'll get me in flow. Now, if I do anything to upset that, so if I have a drink on the weekend, I can critically screw that up for the week, or a good part of the week anyway. So it's really about keeping myself clean and keeping that routine really strong. And that's something that I struggle with. It's a battle. Say,
if you say, when I have a drink on the weekend, does that mean like a single drink or like a drinking binge?
A binge. I have no moderation. So I'm all in and I'll go hard if I'm very disciplined when it comes to both good and bad habits as well. If that makes
good
sense.
Good for you. Yeah. You're a feast or famine kind of guy.
Yeah, it's a killer, isn't it? I mean, how do you guys relate to that?
Precisely the same, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for the most part, I can be moderate and have a drink, you know, have a glass of wine with dinner, but I would prefer to have a bottle of wine with dinner. And then I find that it, you know, I don't feel great the next morning. But I also hate the fact that anything could have leverage over my will. So I will punish myself that way occasionally just to suffer a little bit and push through it, because I don't like the idea of alcohol or, you know, tobacco or cannabis or whatever, or food. I don't want any of those things to rule over my, you know, my will to do what I want to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that actually, and you guys were talking about that in the show. Must have been a couple of months ago. Which was quite interesting. And I wonder about that. I mean, with, you know, you guys have taken some illicit drugs, I'm sure, that I've never even heard of. I know there's one on your website here. Nick, it said here you took something, what was it? That made you question life.
Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca, was it? Yeah. There you go. I couldn't even read the freaking word. ayahuasca, I mean, that's incredible. But, you know, as far as just the regular sort of domesticated drugs of choice, I wonder how, you know, and I want, like, I just don't want to be controlled and I want freedom. And then I look at it and I go, well, if I have beers or, you know, and that's typically what I drink is just beer, then that really doesn't give me freedom. That's, in a sense, making me be controlled by that substance. And if I'm really committed to this whole freedom idea, then how does that reflect on my attitude towards that desire?
That's a great question, Lee, but you also have to be very aware of the rigidity of your thought of what freedom really means. And when you start to get into these very hard-lined ideas with parameters and boundaries, I think that can be just as dangerous as, you know, being completely open and free with your illicit drug use and everything else. You know what I mean? Like both are dangerous extremes. And the answer, as we all know, is almost always somewhere in the middle, you know?
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, I've been guilty of precisely of what you're talking about. And I'm like, well, if I'm looking for a greater level of health, then I can't do any of these things, but it's unhealthy to be so rigid in your thought that you can't, you know, have a glass of wine every once in a while or eat a steak. You know, that's goofy.
Yeah, if I'm talking about going crazy, like, you know, going not just a glass of wine for dinner, I think that's quite good moderation. But where, you know, where you want to just cut loose and lose a bit of control, I was, you know, I reflect on it quite deeply and I wonder, you know, if it's because I'm so regimented in my ways that I really crave that uncertainty that that substance can bring me. And that's
precisely
probably for anyone, you know, you just want to sort of lose control for that period because it's just, you've been so in control. And maybe that's why you crave it, but I don't know if that's, if it's just a way for your mind to trick you into taking it or what it might be.
Good question. What do you think, Nick?
Dude, this is such a deep topic and something I spend a lot of time thinking about. It comes back to, I don't know if it was episode 31 or 32 of Digital Communion that Thomas and I discussed. I used a reference from a Japanese cartoon called Naruto, a genjutsu within a genjutsu, which is basically a mind technique within a mind technique. You don't know if it's actually weaker to be totally abstinent. Maybe it takes strength to say, I'm going to get fucked up this weekend. You know what I mean? We think that that's the willpower like, no alcohol, no sugar, no fucking white bread, no whatever it is you're trying to, you've declared war on in your psyche. But maybe I've noticed with myself, like, I'll give you an example. You guys obviously know what cognitive biases are, or cognitive dissonances, right?
Yes.
You're familiar with those. So one of the cognitive dissonances, I don't know if I'm getting the name exactly correct, but it's I think the seeking of it's information bias. It's the idea that more information will help you make a better decision, or that you'll solve whatever problem or conundrum you have at the current moment by acquiring more information. Which is not always true. In fact, that can sometimes, as we all know, lead to more confusion and anxiety. I remember I was at a dinner table the other night and a friend of mine started talking about these two books that he had read and how they had changed his life, and they were absolutely paradigm shifting and mind bending, and you got to read them and you'll never look at the world in the same way. And I could feel my mind starting that little loop that it does, which is like, maybe this is the answer, or maybe this is an answer, or maybe this is going to give me that what I need. And I was about to order those books when I got home after dinner, and then I realized, no, dude, that's not what you need right now. The strong thing to do is not order those books, right? It's not to go. Your ego wants you to think like you've got to go and acquire this new information and process it and integrate it into your life and find this new path. But maybe, no, dude, like, you got to chill out on information. You've got enough information for now. You just got to, you know. And it's kind of the same thing. Like, I notice, and I'm sure Thomas is exactly the same. Sometimes I'll be at a dinner table and I'll want something, and I'll think it's strong to say no, like, no, fucking no cheesecake. You know, it's got too much sugar and whatever. And I'll actually make a little, it takes effort to say, actually, I will have some. And it's kind of like that genjutsu with inner genjutsu. It's something I'm exploring a lot lately. I find it quite interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I just think it's freaking life and you've got to enjoy it too. And what's the problem? And you're right. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't overthink things too much. I think if I absolutely agree with your information thing, you know, I get quite distraught on myself when I haven't read a book for the week. And I don't know why I put that sort of pressure on myself, but I like to read and I enjoy it. But as you started off, you know, this conversation, I think it was you, Nick, or Thomas, but, you know, it's whatever we want in this life is already within us. We've just got to search for that inside and bring that to the forefront. And more information is not going to bring that out.
I watched something, which, I mean, you guys, I know you won't be surprised by this because we're all pretty open-minded, but last week a friend of mine, he came over and I was hanging out with a couple of buddies. One of them arrived and he said, hey, I got to show you this. And we logged onto YouTube and he started pulling up interviews with Charles Manson. And I initially was pretty skeptical. And then a lot of the things Manson was saying were pretty fucking profound, man. And like really blew my mind. One of them was the interviewer asked him, what books have you been reading? And he just said, I don't read books anymore. And the interviewer obviously was perplexed and said, why? And he said, well, I find that there's nothing as interesting in books as the thoughts that my mind is coming up with lately. And,
wow.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Geez, dude, I like literally stopped the video and I had to process that. And I realized I'd like to be I'd like to have a similar ability, which is to be able to just sit down and let my thought processes entertain me like better than a book could. What do you think, Thomas?
I can tell you firsthand that is what my 105-year-old grandmother, that's all she has to entertain her because her eyesight has failed to the point where she doesn't actually read or watch television. So at first I thought it was a terrible prison, but she's had, you know, she's traveled the world and she was fairly mobile until she was about 103. So, you know, she's got a couple of, you know, a few lifetimes worth of thoughts, and I don't know how many she can access, but that's all she has. And she is a pretty happy, fairly lucid person, you know, at least some of the time. So, yeah. And actually I have to mention that Marcus Aurelius talks about that in Meditations at one point. I can't remember the exact line, so I'm paraphrasing, but, it's something to the effect of, you know, throw away your books and quit looking to them for all the answers when you pretty much understand the way the world works. And if it's compatible and reasonable according to nature, then, you know, go with it and don't be surprised or amazed.
Quite ironic that you read that in a book, though.
I know, right? Yeah, exactly. I was like, what's all this Marcus Aurelius hate on books? But he mentions it a few times.
I read something when I was maybe 14 or 15. My dad gave me this little booklet, which I absolutely loved. It's called Life's Little Instruction Book. And it was this guy's kid was heading off to college, and he wanted to give him some wisdom to take with him. So he started compiling this list of little snippets of things that had helped him in life. And one of them, a lot of them stuck with me, but one of them that really did was live a good, honest life. And that way, when you're old, you can look back and enjoy it a second time. Mm, and nice. I guess that's what your grandmother's doing at the moment, is she's probably enjoying it for the third or fourth time. Hey.
Oh, dude, like she'll enjoy it for like the 20th or 30th time during my visit. so the mind is, and that's really, you know, I make light of it and I should, because she's had a tremendously blessed and fortunate life. But man, it's, I get to see into the future of a first world citizen every time I go visit. And I got to tell you and all the listeners, if you're not taking care of your health now, it will catch up to you, and the future is a little bit bleak. It is full of cocktails of medications and complete lack of mobility. So make sure you're eating well and exercising, because you don't want to end up like Mimi.
Nah.
You think she, I mean, I'm guessing you're implying that she didn't exercise and eat well.
She did well. I mean, for the average person, I mean, again, she was mobile until she was 103. So that's an outlier already. yeah, that's exactly. So she did really well. But I mean, dude, this is it's not like she was ever on a diet. I think she drank a Pepsi or a Coca-Cola every day for about 88 years or something crazy like this. God, so damn. She wasn't afraid of sugar. She wasn't afraid of chemicals.
It just happens like that sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just that's. I think that's just tremendous genetics. You know, just very resilient genes, and she got away with murder and for a lot of her life. But now, you know, Father Time's undefeated, as they say, and she's paying the price with her brain and its lucidity and consistency. And she talks about that with a little bit of wistfulness, but mostly she's a pretty happy gal.
Thomas, you have the mandate, the exclusive. No, it's not even an exclusive mandate. I've given this to a few people, but if that ever happens to me, I want you to hold the pillow over my face till I stop moving.
It's not an exclusive mandate. I would have you do something far more interesting than just choke you out. I would like throw you off a plane and then choke you out in the sky.
Awesome. Okay. Wow. Let's go that way.
Yeah, exactly. Because if that happens to you, we'll both probably be pretty old, and I won't be too far behind.
Uh-huh. How do you guys go to escape from all that information then? Because I mean, you're right. I think modern society has created it so much so that there's all this information around us that it causes a lot of our suffering. Is there anything you guys do in particular that sort of allows you to sort of just escape into your own sort of thoughts and within?
Go ahead, Nick. I definitely have ways that I do it.
Man, this is definitely a cliched thought, but I mean, I'm going to be as honest as I can and tell you that, like, right now in my life, it's a skill that I'm getting better at. And that is just going with how things make me feel, you know. And if I'm reading a book or watching a YouTube video or doing something that makes me feel shitty or feel like my mind's being overloaded or just whatever, feels like there's some kind of negativity, or then I just move away from it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm reading a book, like at the moment I'm reading this massive book, I think it's almost 1,000 pages. It's called Musashi, and it's the semi-biographical novel around the legendary swordsman Miyamoto Musashi. Thomas, this book is... Dude, it's the next level, by the way. You have to read this. Lee, I'm sure you'll enjoy it if you haven't read it.
I've heard about it recently, actually. It might have been you guys talking about it, but certainly
I can't wait.
Oh, dudes, this book is... Anyway, while I'm sitting reading that, I'm in a flow zen bliss state. I just thoroughly enjoy it, and so I keep doing it, you know?
That's interesting.
And I guess that's it for me, yeah. Thomas, what's your answer, bud? I'm very interested.
Well, I mentioned this before, but I think that the communion with nature is absolutely crucial to sloughing off the residual sort of toxicity of that information overload. And for me, I, you know, I'm very fortunate to live close to the ocean, so I have a pretty regular absolution in that cold Pacific briny water, and I just feel instantly better, man. And I think that walking barefoot on the earth, earthing, I think there's very little good data on that, but I just feel so much better on a day-to-day basis when I spend time walking barefoot upon the earth, a natural flowing water source, preferably with tides, but it could be a creek or a pond or a lake, whatever. And then, you know, whether I'm up in the mountains on a regular basis isn't as important as just getting outside and paying attention to the math that's everywhere, you know, in nature, paying attention to the natural, just absolute wonder. I'm just looking around right now going like, ah, man, I've never even seen that leaf before. And there's a giant spider dangling down, underneath it. And, that is such a good break from ones and zeros that come to us in the form of the virtual screen. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Good call, dude. Good call. I, whenever you say that, I'm reminded that I need to do that more. I appreciate that, Thomas. I really do.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad. And I think we all could use it. Me too. I mean, I'll go a long time, just like every other person, you know, spending too much time on social media or trying to download information into my brain. I've been listening to podcasts at 2x, right? And I didn't even know about that. And I didn't even know about that until this year. I feel like I've been cheated this whole time.
I started, yeah, but I couldn't do it. 2x, no.
No, you don't do that?
No, I heard about it, yeah, a while back, and I had a go, and I said, nah, this is just too much, man. Fucking overload
myself.
How about,
How I'm about with one you, and a half?
No, it's got to be normal pace, man. Me just thinking, listening to you talk now, you know, if you talked any faster, I'm just not going to keep up. So it's a nice one X level. What I love both those techniques. I think you're absolutely right. Scheduling some time out in nature, and perhaps that's part of the reason why I like to walk. I do this walk in the morning down beside this river, and I just love looking at the water. But really, time out in nature, I think it's something we really need to schedule at the start of every week. You know, when am I going to spend time in nature? Because otherwise the week takes over and you don't get to fucking do it.
Totally agree.
And it's interesting, Nick, what you said too, because recently I've had that same sort of realization. I've just said, you know, I've put all this pressure on myself to consume this information, read books, listen to podcasts, write, you know, projects, blah, blah, blah. And it just gets too much and you fucking lose your mind. You don't enjoy it as much. So I've just, in the last couple of weeks, I just flow with it. I say, does this feel right? Yep, I'm just going to sit down and read. And that's what I do. Or I sit down and write, you know. And really take the pressure off yourself. And I still find, because a lot of people say, how do you get things done? But I still get shitloads done. And I'm actually better with the time I have then to do those tasks that, you know, you have to do anyway.
It's amazing. It's an amazing phenomenon. Like when you take that... Oh man, when you take that kind of self-imposed or even externally imposed pressure to do and keep doing and be more and acquire more, when you take it off you, it's weird how all those things come anyway. You just happen to be able to get more done and opportunities start flowing towards. It's an amazing discovery. Like I wish I'd made it earlier. I really do.
I think it's I think it's awesome, and it's really, you know, you just, yeah, life's better. What here's a good little tip. I've got to jump to some questions for you guys, but I interviewed this lady last night, and she said when you approach your day, if you approach things that you have to do with I have to do this, instead of that, approach it with I get to do this. Okay, so switch your language around, and then if
fantastic.
If when you say I get to do this, it's really not something that you know, it's not an opportunity, so use it as an opportunity, then perhaps it's something you shouldn't be doing, so just get rid of it. And yeah, I really like that. I thought that was a great tip, you know?
Yeah, I'm taking that for sure. That's cool.
Hey, guys, I want to jump into some questions. I don't know how I'm going to work this in a three-way, but let's do some quick round questions. Nick, what's your favorite food?
Steak, probably steak, like good quality steak. I like that a lot.
Do you guys have any, and this is a question for both of you as well, but do you have any particular diet styles or anything you do to, I don't know.
Over to you, Thomas.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm a huge experimenter. I've dabbled in water only fasting, modified ketogenic diets, carb cycling, fat kid diets. And I think that for most people that I've found, I've worked as a personal trainer for many, many years. I think that most people perform physically and cognitively extremely well on high fats, moderate proteins, and spare carbohydrates. I think that, and I tend to practice that myself. Yep. My typical routine, I'll just go fast. I have coffee in the morning with medium chain triglycerides in the form of coconut oil or caprylic or capric acid. Or maybe a little bit of butter. And then around 1 to 2 p.m., I have a plant-based lunch. And anybody who's listening, I urge you to try eating a plant-based lunch for a week and tell me later how you feel in the afternoon. You're going to get your afternoons back. You're going to feel good. I'm not trying to turn anyone into a vegan or a vegetarian. I eat animal flesh occasionally in the evenings. But again, it's low carbohydrate, high fats, and it sends me off to sleep feeling very sated, and I never feel like I can't make progress in my training, and I never feel weak, and I don't have the insulin spikes that I did when I was consuming a lot of rice, potatoes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, nice.
I'll just say that for the listeners who haven't seen a picture of Thomas, he is living proof that whatever he's doing is working, because the guy is a fucking specimen. It's embarrassing.
Thank you. That's such a nice compliment. Thank you, Nick.
How do you approach it, Nick? Just out of interest? I mean, do you stick to saying strictly? I mean, I've got a mate who sounds a little bit like you, Thomas. He's just full on into it, and I just talk with him for half an hour and I get these ideas and then go out and, you know, I've tried the vegan sort of thing and the meat and the bulletproof coffee stuff, and, you know, I mix it around, but at the end of the day, I just go with the flow and say, look, if I'm not eating processed shit and I'm just eating as raw as I can, so as fresh from the ground and as fresh from the bone as I can, then I'm happy and it seems to work for me.
Very healthy.
But what about you, Nick?
I'm very similar to you, bud. Like, as without going too Deepak Chopra on you guys, it's more like now it's at the point where if I eat something, I'm pretty tuned in. If it makes me feel crappy or like changes my kind of feeling in any way too much in any direction, like I get a sugar spike or whatever it is, you know, I kind of, I'll stay away from it. You know, it's how food makes me feel.
Yeah.
Like I eat bacon and eggs every morning now. I've been doing that for a while and I feel amazing. Yeah, I enjoy it. Like, I like the taste and I feel great. Sometimes even throw in a piece of toast. Fucking, I probably shouldn't even admit that on air.
Whoa, you're a crazy man.
Yeah,
yeah,
no, cool. Like, I like it. What's your favorite leisure activities, guys?
Oh, you go ahead, Nick.
Favorite leisure activity? I mean, it's got to be reading, isn't it? Like, I think I speak for Thomas as well, and you as well, probably, Lee, but, like, I just love reading, man. I really love reading.
Yeah, cool. Thomas?
Oh, and yoga as well. Sorry, I'm mad about yoga at the moment.
That's a great question, Lee, and, man, it's a super challenge because lately I haven't had a ton of that, but I like to spend my leisure time making and creating. And I really, really have found that in the last 10 years of my life, I so enjoy working and making things where before there was nothing. So that could be writing a new song. That could be sketching out a new painting, coming up with a new idea for, you know, a screenplay or a new project. But I love surfing and I love training and I like physical activities and typical, you know, hobbies. But I really like to spend, if I have time where I'm not working on something that needs to get done, I want to be creating the next thing.
Yeah, I like that. It really puts you in a spot, doesn't it? In a place, just in the moment when you do creation sort of work.
Oh, there's nothing better. That's like the muse. That's the muse going right through you. And there's that gets me off more than any drug ever has, is to make something where, you know, sit down at your computer, even when you don't feel like it, and just start doing the work. Stephen Pressfield talks about that a lot.
Yeah.
You read more drugs.
Right, exactly. Stephen Pressfield talks about that in The War of Art and Turning Pro, where it's just like, you know, it's really powerful to sit down against your will and work and force the muse to, you know, a lot of people don't agree with that, but I'm a huge proponent of, you know, if I have writer's block, I can't make that new song. I will sit down and work and work and work until something comes out, and it's unlike anything I ever imagined. It's fantastic. That's joy. Is good.
Yeah, I relate. I did that. I must have done that Saturday or Friday. Wanted to write a post, and I had a title there, so I just opened it up, and I thought, "What the fuck does this title mean?" Because I wrote the title 2 weeks before, and I didn't have any clue. I had no sort of motivation that particular day to write, and I just looked at the title and I just started writing, and I finished it today, and I'm really happy with it. So, yeah, I absolutely can relate.
Congratulations, man. That's a good feeling. Good for you.
Yeah, it's nice. So, what, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. The last question I have for both of you is, what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you? There's a few questions I've skipped today, but I'll ask that final one, and I'll attach to that, do you think we all have a why? So what does living life with passion and purpose mean? And do you think we all have a why?
You want to go, Nick?
Yeah, well, I have something in mind already. My fiance is always helping me come up with questions to ask Thomas, because as you know, in the format of Digital Communion, we each ask each other a question each week. And one of them is, one of the ones she came up with is, she said, ask him why you think, or why humans always have to have, why humans are always searching for meaning. And
great question, man.
Yeah. I'm going to start thinking about that now, Thomas. What made me a lot happier, guys, really, this is one of the things I hope we'll get through to some of the listeners, is I realized is, a long time ago, and this was when I was in a pretty dark place and questioning everything again, you know, like wondering if everything was a conspiracy out to get me, and that I was here as some kind of trap, or if I was burning off bad karma or whatever. I was trying to figure out, why am I here, why is this all happening? And then the thought hit me. It was this one specific thought, which is, I don't know why I'm supposed to be here. I just know that I'm supposed to be here. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. I'm here because I'm supposed to be. And once you internalize that, you're here because you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be a human at this point, alive, enjoying life or experiencing life. There's no other reason. There's no other requirement. Like, you don't have to go and put a mark on the world. You don't have to make X amount of money. You don't have to have 14 children. You don't have to write a book. You don't have to win a competition. You don't have to do anything. You just are supposed to be here. And you can do whatever you want with that. And that's, I think, is a really powerful, like, the why. There is no why. It's just, it is. And that really helped me become so much happier as a human being.
Nice. Thomas?
Damn, that's heavy. Nice one, Nick.
But so should I beat that motherfucker?
Yeah. Okay, so I do think everybody has a why. But I think that the major mistake that is perpetuated over and over is that you're meant to figure it out very young. that you know that you're going to be a fireman, you know, by the time you're 10 years old, or you know you're going to be a baseball player or a politician. A lot of people don't, you know, click with anything. And I think it's very important to try your hand at a lot of different things. If anything, you know, I aspire to be a polymath someday, and it's been super crucial to my development to fucking try everything I have even an inkling of an interest in. Oh, I'd like to write a screenplay, so I wrote one. Or, you know, I want to make a record about the Iliad, but I want to record it in Greece. Okay, well, that's just on my list of things to do, and I don't think that doing that is going to make me the epitome of who I am, but it'll certainly teach me a lot that will put me on the path. And so as far as the why goes, probably everyone has one, but I think there's a good chance that most of us don't get the opportunity to figure out what it is, because we get sidetracked by dumb shit that is, you know, either force-fed us or super conditioned into our minds and our beings. Like, we must be XYZ for our parents or our mentors or our teachers. And I think that's actually truly harmful.
Yeah.
Most of us have just an outrageous amount of potential that really starts to diminish when we get pushed down paths that maybe aren't best for us. So the why is out there. You just have to fight like hell to figure out what it is, and it can change. You know, I struggle constantly with whether or not I'm on the right path, and that's not the issue. The path is the path. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be. Nick and I have talked about this a lot. Like, it doesn't matter if I don't become the greatest actor in the world or musician or writer or whatever the hell I'm pursuing at the time. It's all about, you know, actually getting on that road and trying all these things out.
Yeah. And then doing it with your full heart and as best as you can.
Seed.
Well said, Jesus, guys. Well answered.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having us on the show, Lee. I mean, this is really exciting, and really appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Mate, it was an absolute pleasure to have you both, and great to connect with you. I really enjoyed this conversation. Definitely off the normal sort of path of the show, but I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and I'm sure the audience would have too. So appreciate you both connecting and coming on.
Yeah, all thanks right, so man. Much for having us. See, that was great. I feel that my brain got a good workout this morning, which is one of the things I enjoyed most about my conversations with Thomas. So to have it, like, have an additional person in on that is awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And likewise, Lee and Nick, thank you for stretching my brain. And until I chat with you again, be well.
Been an absolute pleasure, guys. Make sure you check out the show notes at thehiddenwhy.com. I don't know how I'm going to write the show notes because I haven't taken one note, but I'll come up with something. So check out the show notes at thehiddenwhy.com. I'll stick in all the links to Nick and Thomas as well, so you can check them out, and certainly jump on and check out their show, Digital Communion. Well worth to have a listen to if you've enjoyed this rant. So that's it from me. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. Speak soon.